Welcome to Pro-Life in 7 Minutes, the show where I spend over 20 minutes teaching you how you can persuade a pro-choice person in only 7. I'm your host, Catherine Burrow. I'm the co-founder and executive director of the Abortion Dialogue Academy, also known as ADA. Let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. So in case you found this podcast episode by accident, that's the first one you're listening to. My name is Catherine. I'm the executive director of the Abortion Dialogue Academy, and we have developed a 7-minute pro-life argument that on average persuades 1 in 5 pro-choice people to be pro-life. But that is not what today's episode is about. Today's episode is actually about how do you talk about some of the political things, the amendments that are going to be on the ballot for this upcoming election year. I'm going to be using Nebraska as an example, but if you're in another state, you can just kind of insert whatever's happening politically in your state. So I'm going to start by setting the stage and explain what specifically is happening in Nebraska. So in Nebraska, there's a group called Protect Our Rights that is trying to get an amendment to the state's constitution. So here's how the proposed amendment reads. I'm going to read it to you now. All persons shall have a fundamental right to abortion until fetal viability or when needed to protect the life or health of the pregnant patient without interference from the state or its political subdivisions. Fetal viability means the point in pregnancy when, in the professional judgment of the patient's treating healthcare practitioner, there is a significant likelihood of the fetus's sustained survival outside the uterus without the application of extraordinary medical measures. Now, if you go to the Nebraska Catholic Conference's website, they have a whole flyer that goes through the language of this proposed amendment in detail. But the spark notes are it's going to legalize abortion until fetal viability. But viability is being defined the baby's ability to survive without the application of extraordinary medical measures. End quote. Well, the NICU is an extraordinary medical measure. Pretty much the only babies that can survive without the NICU are going to be full-term babies. It's also going to get rid of all of the health and safety regulations around abortion clinics, things like informed consent laws, state licensing laws, inspection requirements. It gets rid of all of those with the line without interference from the state or its political subdivisions. If you're in Nebraska, I hope you feel convicted that if there was ever a time or a season to stand up for life, it is right now. Like this state, these babies, they need you. Now, there are a bunch of volunteer opportunities, but maybe you're like me and you're doing like the little kid circus and you don't have a lot of free time. That is okay. If you could just have a 5-minute conversation with the people in your life that you come across every day, your friends, your family, about this amendment, you can help make a difference in a really critical time for our state. And if you're sitting there like, well, I don't know what to say, I'm going to teach you what you need to know in this episode. So in the first part of this episode, I'm going to talk about my tips for how to have these conversations, how to have them effectively and persuasively. And then in the second half of the episode, I'll talk more specifically about the what do you actually say. Tip number one is do not try and make people pro-life when you go to talk to them about this ballot initiative. And if you're like, what? Why would I not try to convince people to be pro-life? I'm going to explain why using an analogy from football. Imagine you are trying to kick a field goal and the pro-life position is the end zone. How easy or hard it's going to be to score that field goal will depend on 2 factors. 1, the distance from the end zone, and 2, the skill of the person doing the kicking. The same is true when talking about abortion. When we are talking to a pro-choice person on campus who really only thinks abortion should be legal in the case of rape, we persuade 50% of those people to be pro-life. Contrast that with like an average pro-choice person. So this is somebody who thinks abortion should be legal, poverty, teen mother, like early abortions for like sympathetic reasons. Those people, we persuade about 20% of them. And that makes sense if you think about it, because they are further away than the only in the extreme cases person. Let's say you're talking to a pro-choice person that's like a really hard pro-choice person. They're post-abortive. Someone they know is post-abortive. They think abortion should be legal in every case, all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason. That person on campus, we persuade about 7% of them. This is where we get into my first tip, which is to not try to make people pro-life. This ballot initiative is extreme. In Nebraska, abortion is currently legal in the first trimester and in the second and third trimester in the cases of rape incest, and life of the mother. Average pro-choice person, that's what they want. This amendment is way more extreme than the average pro-choice person. You don't have to persuade someone to be pro-life in order to persuade them to vote no on this. And getting them to vote no is going to be way easier than getting them to pro-life. Because getting them to vote no is just like, hey, you don't need to change any of your existing worldview. You just need to see how what you currently believe and this thing are not compatible. That's a really easy field goal. Really anyone with not even a lot of skill can make that. But if you're trying to go with like whatever your current skill set is at apologetics and get that same person all the way to the pro-life field goal, that's a lot further. That's a lot harder. You're going to have a lower success rate. Because what we don't want to have happen is we don't want you to decide, you know what, I'm all or nothing. I'm going for that pro-life field goal. And like, let's say you have a good conversation, but you don't quite hit the mark. Like I said, 80% of the conversations that my highly, heavily trained volunteers have does not result in an immediate persuasion. So you miss the mark. And then the voter concludes that the only people who oppose this amendment and think it's bad are the pro-life people. And the voter thinks to themselves, I'm not 100% pro-life, so I should probably vote in favor of this amendment. And now you're worse off because you tried to shoot for the harder field goal. And you would have been better off if you just focused on convincing them to be against the amendment. Now we're using this Nebraska amendment as an example, but the underlying principle here that really applies to anything political you want to have a conversation about is it's easier to persuade someone to support something that already aligns with their existing values rather than trying to change someone's existing values. So do we need to be talking to people about why they should be pro-life? Yes. Do we need to be creating a pro-life culture? Yes. But if your goal in a conversation is to convince someone of a particular ballot initiative, candidate, political law, it's probably going to be better to focus on what are the talking points that align with what they already believe. That is going to be much more persuasive. Now, tip number two is also going to be a little counterintuitive, and that is to stay on topic. This is a mistake I see all the time in conversations. I call it the Venn diagram mistake. So for most of us, we have more than one issue we care about. Maybe we care a lot about abortion, but we also care a lot about religion, but we also care a lot about other controversial political issues. Imagine a Venn diagram where it's like the three overlapping circles. And one circle is all the people you can persuade on the abortion topic. And the next circle is all the people you can persuade on religion. And then the final circle is all the people you can persuade on maybe whatever your next most important topic is for you. Now, there's going to be some overlap there. There's going to be some people where you can persuade on all three. But the mistake I see people make is in a conversation, they try to tackle more than one topic, all three topics at once. And what that does, if you think what a Venn diagram looks like, is it reduces the total number of people that can be persuaded. Effective evangelization is a series of conversations throughout the course of a relationship, not one conversation where you cover every single topic where you disagree with a person. Because what happens is when you try to cover more than one topic in a conversation, the topics tend to distract from each other. For example, we met a student on campus several years ago. His name was Josh. When we met him, he was atheist. He was pro-choice. He obviously didn't agree with Christian sexual teaching or really Christian teaching on anything. And our volunteers were able to persuade him to be pro-life through a single conversation that was focused on the abortion topic. Well, then he joined the pro-life club and he started hanging out with all these Catholics, all these Christians, and he ended up becoming Catholic. And then in the process of becoming Catholic, he then also came on board with a lot of other controversial topics as well. And so there's that huge transformation that happened to him over the course of different series of conversations. Now, I guarantee you, if that volunteer had tried to talk to him about all the areas they didn't agree on in that first conversation, she would have persuaded him of none of them. And for the record, the order doesn't necessarily need to be abortion's the first conversation. I remember when I was in college, a lot of the girls on the women's basketball team, I played women's basketball, a lot of them were post-abortive, a lot of them were very pro-choice, they were very closed off on the abortion topic, but they were more open to Jesus, to religion. And so they would be invited to like the crew Christian athlete groups. And I know the leaders of those groups and they were pro-life, but they did not lead with abortion. They led with, hey, let's just get to know Jesus. And then went into some of the lifestyle changes, lifestyle choices. And then abortion was one of those topics that you have further down the road. The order is going to be different for people based on where their openness is. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to make the Venn diagram mistake and try to shove all the things into a single conversation. So if your goal in the conversation is to convince someone to vote against the ballot initiative or to vote in any particular way on something political, you want to stay focused on that topic. You can always have another conversation at another time, but you don't want to be throwing all of the other political things and all the other controversial things and overwhelming that conversation because it's going to hurt your persuasiveness on all the topics you care about. Now, while we're talking about the topic of staying on topic, I will comment that sometimes people will say to me that I want to stay on topic, but what if the person brings things up? What if they bring up sex education or contraception or these other kind of controversial topics? I want you to know, though, that this is sometimes a technique that pro-choice people will use intentionally. I was training our newest staff member, Ethan, and if you don't know our organization, a lot of us are Catholic. He is our first Protestant evangelical staff member, which we're very excited about because if it's not obvious by this podcast episode, we think everyone should be pro-life, regardless of where they're landing religiously. It was funny, though, because he's gone to seminary, so he's very well read. And the first conversation that he had on campus was this woman. She was in a collar, like a religious collar. I was telling the story to my staff and they're like a dog collar? Because campus nowadays. No, not a dog collar, like a religious collar, like a female pastor and a suit coat and then like jeans that were kind of fancy looking. That was a get up for sure. And she approached us and she was very pro-choice, unsurprisingly. And I could just tell, it's just like, what is this person that is my first conversation? Because he theologically was already like looking at her get up and being like, we are not aligned right now. I can already tell. What was so interesting about the conversation is that anytime he started to really make progress in the conversation and kind of got her off of her talking points, because she clearly has talking points. She's a pro-choice pastor. She clearly is used to a certain way she likes to talk about this issue and justify it to her congregation. And whenever he would start to get her off of that, she would intentionally try to bring up a different controversial topic or get back to her comfort zone. Sometimes this is not intentional on the pro-choice person. Sometimes you're talking to a pro-choice person, you say something, it makes them think about something that's off topic and they bring it up. And that's just organic, normal conversation. But sometimes it is a technique that people will use when they start to feel challenged, is they want to get back to like ground that they're comfortable with. And so if you let them do that, if you just let the conversation go wherever the person wants to take it, you can jeopardize your own persuasiveness. Now, tip number three is to use neutral language. Imagine for a minute that you are reading a newspaper article. The article you're reading is about a recent 40 Days for Life campaign, and it starts referring to the people on the sidewalk as these anti-choice Jesus freaks, women hating, and it goes on and on and on. Well, you're probably going to just put that paper down, maybe throw it across the room into your fireplace because of the word choice. The word choice is communicating bias. It tells you what the author's stance or side is. And this is bad for a couple of reasons. The first is it's generally distracting. You're more focused right now on what they're calling the people than what was actually happening at the event. And that bias is also going to hurt credibility because you as a pro-life person, you're going to be like, I don't trust this newspaper source. I don't trust that they're giving me accurate information. This is what you don't want to do in conversations. Even though pro-life people, we do this all the time. We use slurs or like terms that I would consider overly pro-life in conversations. And what they do is they communicate our bias. They make us sound less trustworthy, less credible to a pro-choice person. And they're distracting. They distract from the conversation and the actual argument. So for example, if you're in a conversation, we're not calling people pro-aborts. We're not calling people baby killers. We're not using the word murder or genocide or abortion mills. Murder is a really interesting one because as pro-life people, we like to throw that one around a lot, but it's really unhelpful because of the connotation it has in our society. So quick story. When I was in college, we had this girl who she showed up to one of our pro-life tables with a little notebook paper sign that said, keep your rosaries off my ovaries. That was our introduction to her. And many of our volunteers ended up having a conversation with her, but it was actually one of our male students who had a conversation with her where she asked, do you think that women who have abortions are murderers? And he said, no, I don't think they're murderers and these are kind of the reasons. Well, she later shared that her mother had had an abortion and that was the main driving force of why she was so pro-choice. Because when we say the word murderer, it doesn't just mean a person who killed another person. That's not what murderer means. In our culture, we think Ted Bundy. We think horrible human, unredeemable person, just bad person. And she felt like that is what pro-life people were calling her mother. So when our volunteer told her that he didn't think her mother was a murderer, she could finally calm down enough and really hear the arguments for the first time. And she said that that was the most persuasive conversation she'd had with any of our volunteers. And this is why neutral language is so, so, so important. So let's talk about some more neutral terms. Pro-choice, unborn, baby, killing. Killing is a fine word. It's a much less charged than murder. Abortion, abortion clinics. So we're using neutral words. Okay, so now let's get into tip number four. Tip number four is to keep the person you're talking to calm. Keep the pro-choice person calm. A lot of pro-life people want to come to me and they're like, I was calm. And I'm like, okay, but you're not the important one. The important one is the pro-choice person. And the reason for this is it's just basic human psychology. When our emotions are heightened, our ability to think rationally decreases exponentially. Have you ever been in like a conflict, a fight with a spouse or a friend where you got so upset that you like couldn't even make sentences anymore? Like you're just kind of saying things that don't make sense and aren't real words. You're just like, that's normal. That's because when our emotions are heightened, our ability to reason decreases. And so if you're trying to reach people with reason, they need to be calm enough to even be able to hear the reason. So that's why it's so important that we keep the person we're talking to calm. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're probably like, hey, how am I supposed to keep this conversation calm though? This is like a controversial topic. Isn't it just going to get heated? The truth is that you have control over, I would say 95% of your conversations, like what the tone is going to be and how calm it's going to be. That is completely within your control. I'm not telling you, you're never going to meet a person that's like a little unhinged and you can't calm them down. It doesn't matter what you do. That does happen, but that's really rare and few and far between. Most of the times, if your conversation got heated, it's because you didn't use proper de-escalation techniques. So what are proper de-escalation techniques? Well, there's kind of two main ones that I would advise you to use. The first one is going to be just something you do internally, which is you need to reframe the pro-choice person in your mind. A lot of us pro-life people run around believing certain myths about pro-choice people. And because we believe these myths, we enter every conversation with a pro-choice person like we're about to hit a boxing match. And the pro-choice person's like, whoa, I guess we're fighting now. But it didn't need to be like that. So what you have to do is you have to reframe the pro-choice person in your mind so that when you approach them, you're approaching them like they're another human being, not like they're a hooded figure in a dark alley. Sounds like a silly tip, but just changing how you view the person you're talking to will change your body language, your tone, your posture, your demeanor, and it's going to naturally de-escalate the conversation because you're not going into the conversation anticipating a fight. Okay, so what are some of these myths that we believe about pro-choice people? Well, the first myth we believe is that every pro-choice person has done a lot of research into the abortion topic. I'm about to tell you guys, that is not true. In fact, I would say most pro-choice people have done very little research into this topic. We think that other people care about something as much as us, look into it as much as us, have read the same things we've read, but that's often not true. It's important to remember that there are so many controversial topics in America. It's impossible, really, truly impossible to be really well-informed and an expert on all of them. So for a lot of pro-choice people you're going to meet, they've maybe heard like a couple of sound bites. They really don't know very much about this topic. And this gets us into like kind of the second myth, which is, okay, but if they're uninformed on abortion, it's their fault. It's a moral failing of theirs. No one should be uninformed on this issue. Once again, we got to remember, people don't know what they don't know. They don't know what they don't know. I want you to think back on who's the first person who told you about the abortion topic. For myself, it was my parents. I was probably in fourth grade, fifth grade. I saw a Planned Parenthood. I asked my mom what it was. She's like, that's a Planned Parenthood. They kill babies in it. But imagine if when I was in fourth grade, I asked that same question and my mom had responded with, well, sometimes there's women that find themselves in really hard situations and they're pregnant. And so before they have the baby, they just have an abortion. Totally different answer that could have been given to me. Imagine if that first person that told you the truth about abortion, what if they told you something different? Or what if they had been mad at you that you didn't already know all the things that they knew? Like, can you imagine if my mom turned around to like her small child and was like, how do you not know what abortion is? How are you not already pro-life? You know what I mean? That would not be very effective. I'd be like, I don't know why I'm being yelled at right now. And so that's how we approach pro-choice people. We approach them with this like moralistic, like, how dare they not already be informed? How dare they not already know this? Instead of recognizing how awesome is it that we get to be that first person that comes into their life and tells them the truth about abortion. Because the number of times that we are on the college campus and the pro-choice person says that we are the very first pro-life person they have ever talked to. The first pro-life person they have ever talked to. We're mad at them for not being pro-life and we're the first pro-life person they've ever met. Or better yet, sometimes we get, you're the first reasonable pro-life person, kind pro-life person, compassionate pro-life person they've ever talked to. And this kind of gets into the final myth, which is that pro-choice people are just these like baby killing monsters. Here's the thing you got to understand about pro-choice people. They don't think abortion kills a baby. They really don't think it kills a baby. They think it prevents a baby from coming into existence. Now, I'm not saying all pro-choice people think that. There's probably some that are like, yep, kills a baby, I don't care. But generally speaking, most of the pro-choice people that we're going to meet, that you're going to meet, the kind of uninformed well-meaning pro-choice people. They're just misinformed. They don't think it kills a baby. They haven't really thought about it very much. They've just been told some pro-choice talking points. They've been told if you want to be a good person, you got to be pro-choice. And that's just kind of where they're at. So as you go out and you talk to people about the ballot initiative, and maybe you meet people who are pro-choice or mushy pro-life or just aren't as concerned or alarmed as you are, I want you to not view them as your adversary, but to view them as an opportunity. I kid you not, our staff member met one of the people who are collecting signatures for the ballot initiative. Like, if there was ever a person you would think would understand what this ballot initiative is going to do, it's probably the person collecting signatures. I kid you not. This guy, he thought that the initiative was only going to legalize it until 14 weeks, and he didn't really even know hardly anything about what an abortion procedure is or what it does or anything at all. All he knew is that it was, quote, women's rights, and it was a good paying job. Fun fact, actually, about that story. Our staff member was out with volunteers, and I think they convinced him to quit the job, and they took him to church. So we'll keep you posted on what happens with that one. But he didn't know what the thing was that he was collecting signatures for, guys. I'm telling you, most of the people you talk to are also not going to know. So as I mentioned, there's two ways you're going to keep the conversation calm. The first is you're just going to internally reframe the pro-choice person in your mind. So when you approach them, your body language is not fist fight, but your body language is, I'm so excited to get to tell this person the truth about this ballot initiative. This reasonable, compassionate person who does not want this to pass. Now, the second tool you're going to use is a tool you're actually going to use in the conversation. And this is called building common ground. So building common ground, I've had a whole podcast episode on this, but essentially what it is it's telling the pro-choice person something you both agree on. There's a couple things I want you to keep in mind about common ground. Is first of all, you want it to be truthful. Do not lie. If the pro-choice person says, I'm pro-choice, don't be like, me too. No, you don't want to lie to the pro-choice person. You want the common ground to be something you and them both genuinely agree on. Now, additionally, you want the common ground to be relevant. So you want it to be related to what the pro-choice person just said to you. So the pro-choice person was like, yeah, I just like think abortion should be legal in the case of rape because that's like a really hard situation. You don't want to respond with, I agree that deforestation is a problem and that we should be working harder to take care of our environment. You want it to be related to what they just said. You also want it to be immediate. So before you say anything that could be considered like challenging, like any but kind of sentences, a challenge, a disagreement, so to speak, before you do that, I want you to say one sentence immediately of common ground before any challenging. So if you're talking to the pro-choice person about the ballot initiative and they're like, well, I just don't really like to get involved in politics, before you say something to challenge them, it's important to do that one sentence and say something like, well, you know, I agree. I generally am not a big fan of like all the conflict that you see in politics, but I think this ballot initiative, this amendment is important to be informed on because of. And then the fourth thing is you want your common ground to be positive. You want to communicate a positive view of the pro-choice person. I like to say that pro-choice people are like a wild bear. They are just as afraid of you as you are of them. Like, you're coming up to them and you're talking about the most controversial issue in America. And they're like, is this person going to start screaming at me? Like, what are they going to do? Do they hate me? Can I just be honest with them and tell them what I actually think about abortion? Or do I need to dance around this topic? But the truth is, you want them to be honest. You want them to tell you their real truths. I always tell parents this. I'm like, you'd much rather your kid come to you and be like, I'm pro-choice and here's why, than just like, keep it to themselves. And then you never have a chance to answer those arguments. And so you want your common ground to communicate like, hey, I've got a positive view of you. I don't think you're a monster. It's totally fine that you're saying these things to me. Let's talk about them. So that is common ground. So I'm going to give a couple of quick examples. I'm going to say something that you might have come up in your conversations on the ballot initiative. And then I'm going to give you like a 1 second pause for you to say out loud some common ground. And then I'll give you an example of something that I would say. So for example, let's say the person you're talking to about the ballot initiative says, I support abortion in the case of rape. How could you build common ground with that? Give you 1 second, say it out loud. Awesome. Okay. So here's my example. And for the record, yours doesn't have to match mine, but I would say I agree that rape is the hardest and the most unfair situation for a woman to find herself pregnant in. Notice how I'm not saying I agree with you, abortion should be legal in the case of rape, but I am acknowledging the agreement that rape is horrible. And then I could challenge, but the law in Nebraska already has exceptions for the case of rape. Notice again that my challenge is not trying to convince them to be pro-life in the case of rape. My challenge is focused on the ballot initiative, which is going back to tip 1 and 2, which is we're not trying to persuade them to be pro-life. We're staying focused on just getting them to not vote for the ballot initiative. Let's do another example. Let's say the person says, yeah, but I am pro-choice. How could you build common ground with that? I'm going to give you a moment. Something I typically say is I agree that we don't want to restrict people's choices unnecessarily. And then you could challenge with, it's going to get rid of regulations that keep abortion safe and it's going to be putting women's lives at risk. Notice once again, my challenge is not trying to convince them to be pro-life. My challenge is focused on the ballot initiative. That is my goal. I'm going for that easy field goal, people. Let's say they say, I don't know, is this like really that big of a deal to get worked up about? Common ground. How could you build common ground with that? Let me give you a moment to answer. So I would say something like, I agree that it does seem like a lot of bills or laws or amendments don't really seem to impact our community that much. But, and now we're getting into that challenge, but this amendment is going to allow late-term abortion and get rid of all the common sense health and safety regulations on abortion clinics. So notice how I built that common ground first. Not agreeing with them that it's not a big deal, but I'm agreeing with a part of their sentiment. Last example, let's say they say something like, what if abortion is medically needed? How would you build common ground with that? I would say something like, I agree that no one wants women to die. I know it sounds funny, like, duh, nobody wants women to die. Why do I have to say that out loud? You have to say it out loud because if you don't say it out loud, the pro-choice person will not understand that you agree with them. They really will assume that you'd want women to die unless you vocalize that. And then the challenge would be, but the law already has life of the mother exceptions, and this amendment is going to get rid of the safety regulations on abortion clinics. So those are my four tips on how to talk about this ballot initiative or really anything political persuasively. Tip one, don't try to persuade the person to be pro-life. Tip two, stay on topic. Tip three, use neutral language. And tip four, keep the conversation calm by reframing the pro-choice person in your mind and building common ground throughout the conversation. So the Nebraska Catholic Conference, their goal for everyone is that we'll all go out and we'll talk to five people every week. What I always tell myself and what I'm going to encourage you to tell yourself is the worst thing that's going to happen is you have an uncomfortable feeling, an awkward exchange. It is worth it to feel uncomfortable for 5 minutes for an unborn baby's life. It is worth it. I will feel uncomfortable for 5 minutes over and over for an unborn child's life. So if this is going to be on average like a 3 minute conversation and you do five of those a week, we're looking at 15 minutes of feeling uncomfortable to try to save some babies' lives. So now you might be like, okay, I'm in, I'm going to do it. I'll do my five, but how do I start the conversations? Who do I talk to? And what do I actually say for those 3 minutes? Because most of these tips have been what not to say. So that's what we're going to go through next. We're going to go through what do you actually say? So there is a 6-step process you're going to go through to talk about this ballot initiative. Now, if you are in another state, you can just apply this framework to whatever political thing you want to talk about. So you're going to use the 6 steps regardless of who you're talking to, but I'm also going to teach you 2 methods. I'm going to teach you the friends and family method and then the how do I talk to complete strangers method. So let's start with the friends and family method. Starting a conversation is actually a lot easier than people think it's going to be, especially if you're talking to friends and family. I'm going to give you kind of 2 examples of how you can do it. And the first is you can just approach your friends or family member and just start telling them. I was listening to this podcast recently, and they were telling us about this new abortion constitutional amendment they're trying to pass here in Nebraska. Have you heard about this? Now, here's just a pro tip. Always ask people, have they heard about something? Don't ask them if they want to hear about something. Nobody wants to hear about it. We actually do this on campus. We don't ask people, do you want to hear our 7-minute argument? We're just like, can we share it with you? If you're less brave, you could even go up to people and just ask them, hey, how was your weekend? What you've been up to lately? And then typically, socially, they'll respond with like, how was your weekend? What have you been up to lately? And you can be like, I was listening to this podcast, or I was at this event and they were telling us about this new abortion constitutional amendment they're trying to pass in Nebraska. Have you heard about this? So notice how in 2 sentences, it's actually really easy to start the conversation with anyone that you're remotely friendly with. After the conversation starter, step 2 is to explain the current laws, because any pro-choice person who's remotely moderate is going to be absolutely fine with what current Nebraska law is. They're also not going to know what the current laws are. So what we don't want them doing is we don't want them going to vote and think, oh, abortion is going to be illegal if I don't vote for this extreme ballot initiative. So in step 2, you'll say, in our current Nebraska laws, abortion is legal in the first trimester with exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother in the second and third trimester. So you've quickly shown the pro-choice person in like 1 sentence that there's absolutely no need for this abortion amendment. Now, step 3 is to explain the amendment. And this is where you get into what the Nebraska Catholic Conference calls the deceiving part. How it reads is not really how it's actually going to act if it gets passed. So step three is a group is trying to pass an amendment that will legalize abortion late into pregnancy, even after the baby can feel pain. They're saying it's until viability, but it's written as viability without medical intervention like the NICU. So in other words, this is going to legalize abortion into the second and even the third trimester of pregnancy. Now, step four is where you're going to explain why this is bad. This gets into what the Nebraska Catholic Conference would call the dangerous part of the amendment. You're going to say most abortions are in the first trimester. So all this amendment is going to do is wipe out all of the common sense health and safety regulations on abortion clinics like licensing, inspections, and informed consent. Now, there's actually over 50 laws that this will potentially wipe out, but some of the most salient for people are requirements that these clinics be properly licensed, that they be inspected to make sure they're following proper health and safety guidelines, and that they are giving informed consent to their patients about just the risks of the abortion medical procedure, just like you would be given informed consent before you get abdominal surgery. Those laws would completely go away if this passes, and we've actually seen that in other states that have passed similar amendments, that those laws have been the first thing that went. Notice also, though, that the why it's bad is what I would call like the common ground of why it's bad. It's like what pro-life and pro-choice people can both agree on why it's bad. It's obviously not the only reason it's bad, but it's the one we're focusing on because it's the one that like everyone is going to get behind and be like, yeah, we don't want this for our state. And this gets us into step five, which is to explain the motive. And this is where we get into what the Nebraska Catholic Conference calls the demeaning part of the amendment. A lot of times when you're talking to someone, they're like, okay, well, if this is so horrible and so unnecessary, why is anybody promoting it? Why are there all these petitioners running around getting signatures for it? And so that's essentially what you're going to explain in step five. You're going to explain that the abortion clinics are trying to get this passed. Out-of-state abortion clinics are trying to get this passed because they can make more money if there are no regulations here in Nebraska. But this is going to be really bad for our state, for women, for girls, if this does pass. And then finally, this leads us into step six, which is going to be the call to action. This is what you want the person you're talking to do about the information you just shared with them. So what you're going to say is, if someone asks you to sign the abortion constitutional amendment when you're out and about, don't. And if you see it on the ballot, just make sure you vote against it and make sure you tell other people about it, because I just don't think enough people are talking about this dangerous proposal. Now, if someone you're talking to shares with you that they've actually already accidentally signed the abortion constitutional amendment, probably because the person they're talking to knew about as much about it as the man that our volunteers talk to, which is next to nothing, and they regret signing it, there is a process by which they can remove their signature from the amendment. So those are the six steps, and that covers how you're going to start conversations with friends and family. Now, the Nebraska Catholic Conference is setting a goal that all of us will talk to five people every week between now and the election. But if you're like me, you're like, I don't have that many friends. I'm going to run out of people to talk to. And so in that scenario, there's the option to do stranger evangelism. Now, I know for some people that is absolutely terrifying. You're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to talk to strangers about this issue. It's actually, believe it or not, in my personal opinion, easier than talking to your friends and family. And so what I'm going to send out in email is a survey that you can use. And so what you do is go out to anywhere that you have freedom of speech rights, any public space. Honestly, any space you see them getting petitioner signatures, you could go there as well. What you do is you have the survey, just get a clipboard, bring a friend, and then you approach people and you say, hey, I'm doing a survey on abortion. Do you have 3 minutes to answer four quick questions? It's very easy to start a conversation. Many people will be like, yeah, I got 3 minutes. I'll answer four quick questions. The cool thing about the survey is that it essentially does step one and two of the six steps for you. It's going to start the conversation for you and you just have to read it. And then it's going to educate them on what the current abortion laws are and prime them to see that they probably don't want this amendment to pass even before you finish the survey. The first question on the survey is, one, in Nebraska, abortion is legal in the first trimester with exceptions later in pregnancy for cases of rape, incest, or Life of the Mother, which of the following describes your view on the current law? Option one, I agree with the current law. I think it's moderate. Option two, I disagree with the current law. I think late-term abortion should be legal. Option three, I disagree with the current law. I think abortion should not be legal. Now, most people who are pro-choice are probably going to say, I agree that the law is moderate, which is good. You want that framed in their mind. You want them thinking, oh yeah, our current law is moderate, because you're then going to show them how this new thing is extreme and dangerous. So then question two, you'll ask, do you think abortion should be legal after the baby can feel pain? And then the options are yes, abortion should be legal after the baby can feel pain, or no, abortion should not be legal after the baby can feel pain. And then question three is, do you think there should be laws regulating the safety of abortion clinics to make sure they are properly licensed and inspected? And the options are yes, I think safety regulations are important, or no, I do not think safety regulations are important. Now notice how these question two and three are really priming the person to realize that if they think abortion after the baby can feel pain is like horrible and inhumane, and they think safety regulations are important, then they would not want this amendment. You haven't even told them about the amendment yet, and you're already setting them up to realize that they don't want this thing that people are trying to pass. And then step four, you're going to say, would you generally consider yourself pro-choice or pro-life? This is just good information for you to have, just knowing who you're talking to. So as I said, step one, start the conversation, and step two, explain the current laws have already been done just by doing the survey. You're literally just reading a survey to a person. And then all you have to do is steps three, four, five, and six. Just to review, step three, this is where you're going to explain the amendment. So you're finishing up the survey and you're saying, thanks so much for taking the survey. Just so you know, there's a group trying to pass an amendment that is going to legalize abortion late into pregnancy, even after the baby can feel pain, which they probably have just told you they don't like. They're saying it's until viability, but it's written as viability without medical intervention, like the NICU. So in other words, into the second and even the third trimester of pregnancy. Then you're going to do step four, explain why this is bad or dangerous. Most abortions are in the first trimester. So all this amendment is going to do is wipe out all of the common sense health and safety regulations on abortion clinics, like the licensing and inspection and informed consent. Then step five, you're going to explain the motive, because once again, sometimes people are going to be like, okay, then this is so horrible. Why are people promoting it? The motive, these are out-of-state abortion clinics that are trying to get this passed because they can make more money if there are no regulations on abortion in Nebraska. But this will be really bad for our state and women and girls if this does pass. And this is where you lead them into the call to action. So finishing up with, just so you know, if someone asks you to sign the abortion constitutional amendment, I would encourage you to not. If you see it on the ballot, I would just encourage you to vote against it. And just to make sure you tell other people about it, because I don't think enough people are talking about this dangerous proposal. So you've just said six sentences, you've done four steps. This whole thing, like I said, will probably take you about 3 minutes to do. And that's all you have to do. Keep in mind, at the end of the day, this is really a numbers game. So your goal is just to get this information in front of people, to stay on topic, not necessarily to have a debate on abortion, but just to let them know that this is going to be deceiving, dangerous, and demeaning. So I think my final notes for this episode is, if you're in Nebraska, I think it's really important that you discern what level of activism you're being called to right now. At minimum, I think everyone in Nebraska should be talking to their friends and family about what is happening. If you feel called to a higher level of activism, I want you to go to the Nebraska Catholic Conference's website and sign up to volunteer. There are groups that are going out and having these stranger conversations, so you can sign up to go with them and work with people who are more experienced while you're learning the ropes. And then everything I've talked about, these six steps, the script, the where does it say that in the amendment, all of these resources, these are all going to be at the Nebraska Catholic Conference's website, which is NE, as in the initials of our state, NebraskaCatholic.org. That's NECatholic.org. When you go to that website, you can take action, join the Five for Life Club, figure out about other volunteering opportunities, and get some of the literature that I've been talking about in this episode. And if you're listening to this in another state, I hope that this episode was still helpful. Like I said, I would bookmark it for the future, because a lot of these principles that we talked about can really be used to have controversial conversations on really anything political that's going on in your state. If you liked today's episode, you can help support the channel by leaving us a 5-star review. Make sure you hit that follow button so you never miss an episode. And if you haven't yet, sign up for our podcast email list on our website. That's www.abortiondialogueacademy.org/podcast. That way you get all the training exercises from the show delivered right to your inbox. Now I will see all of you next Saturday as I continue to teach you how you can persuade someone to be pro-life in 7 minutes. Until next week, God bless.